The Bible study on KFUO Radio is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, centered in the gospel of Jesus Christ in faithfulness, servanthood, responsiveness, and excellence, Concordia Seminary.
Second hour of the Bible study, the Ask the Pastor Hour. Telephone numbers 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Open phone program, you set the topics. Of course, if you don't set them, I have an overstuffed Ask the Pastor folder here. Our guest in this hour of conversation is Dr. Victor Belton. He is pastor at Peace Lutheran Church in Decatur, Georgia. I guess we could say that's a suburb of Atlanta. Good morning, Pastor.
Good morning. Atlanta is a suburb of Decatur.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got that reversed. So you're rooting for the Decatur Braves this year, are you?
Absolutely. Thank you, sir.
How's everything down in Decatur?
Things are well. It's a nice sunny day. We're going to have about 70 degrees or so, and so it's a good day.
Has spring sprung in Atlanta yet?
Spring is getting ready. Things are budding, and things are coming out. We'll probably have one or two more cold snaps, but it's pretty much done.
I've heard that along that belt, which we otherwise consider to be the South, that you had a pretty hard winter. You had to deal with some things that you don't usually have to deal with. Is that right?
We had about 6 inches of snow with about a quarter inch of ice cover. That shut the city down for an entire week.
Really?
Yeah, all 11 of our trucks had been deployed.
All 11 of them, huh?
11 of them. And so, you know, in the South, that happens once every 50 years or so. So there's no need to keep a fleet of those.
Yeah.
For those kinds of contingencies. So when significant snowfall happens here, it really hits us kind of hard. But it was a great opportunity to spend some time with family, and I sent out daily devotions to church members so that they could stay in tune with their faith, and so it was a great time. First, every once in a while, just need a bit of time off, even if God has to supply a little snowstorm to help you do it.
The first story I want to take up with you comes from the WorldNet Daily website. Talked about this yesterday with Pastor Nabil Noor and wanted to speak with you about it today. The headline is, FBI says Muslim Brotherhood deeply rooted inside the United States. The subhead is, terror support group controls most Islamic groups and mosques in America. I'm going to read just a little bit of this for you and our listeners here. Out of Washington, D.C., staff investigators with the House and Senate Intelligence Committees say they are probing the domestic security threat posed by the radical Muslim Brotherhood, and specifically whether Brotherhood operatives have penetrated the United States government. The true nature, ambitions, and global reach of the Cairo-based Muslim Brotherhood suddenly have become the focus of debate in Washington, following unrest in Egypt and other parts of the Middle East. As the Muslim Brotherhood threatens to effectively replace Egypt's secular pro-Western regime, the tentacles of its worldwide jihadist movement have reached deep into the Muslim community in America. Shockingly, federal court documents reveal that virtually every major Muslim organization in America is a front group for the Brotherhood. They also show that its U.S. network has raised millions of dollars for Hamas, Al-Qaeda, and other terrorist groups. So you live next to the fairly big city, not as big as Decatur, of course, but fairly big city, Atlanta. And the urban setting is often a place where there'll be a major mosque. I Googled Atlanta Mosque and found, yes, there is the Al-Farouq Masjid of Atlanta. Imam Muhammad Sajid apparently gave a lecture there earlier this month, and there's a photograph there. So you have what I would call a major mosque in Atlanta. Does any of this cross your radar screen, Pastor? Are you just busily doing Christian ministry out there in Decatur?
Or... I was pumping gas one afternoon over the summer, early fall, and I heard this sound wafting through the air, and it was Muslim call to prayer. at a gas as I'm pumping gas at a gas station not 3 miles away from our church. And when I heard that, I went, this is just it's bizarre. This is not Khartoum. This is not Damascus. This is the United States of America, Atlanta, Georgia, and it's dusk, and there's an Islamic call to prayer wafting through the air. It just took exception to it. So where are the church bells? We don't do steeples with church bells anymore. How does the church begin to speak in that culture? How does the church begin to gain some sense of ascendancy once again?
Good questions. Do you have any answers?
Well, you know, I really just wanted to build a steeple. And so the whole time the call of prayer is going, I wanted to ring some church bells, man. That's the stark reality of the world in which we currently live. And the world in which we currently live is a world in which the church has given up so much turf and so much property that intellectually and physically and spiritually that kind of thing is now popular and is commonplace in our lives. It's unfortunate that we've given up that kind of influence.
So what do we do? Do we just take the back seat, go to the back of the bus, take our place where we belong, and watch as Islam continues in ascendancy, and soon we'll have the Muslim call to prayer in all of our American towns?
You know, I hope I'm agreeing with Pastor Noor, who's a good friend, when I say we do what Jesus commanded us to do. As you're going, make disciples of all nations, baptizing them. I mean, it's not rocket science. I mean, it's Jesus told us what we need to be doing.
Well, now, Pastor, if you're going to do that, that's going to require you to exercise some judgment on some things. It's going to require you to probably bring the offense of the gospel to some people. It's going to require you to show a certain level of intolerance. All of these things are unacceptable.
Yeah, and you know what? First of all, that commandment was not to the pastor, to the exclusion of all the people of God. That commission is a thing that we're all to be doing after all is said and done. You are Christian, aren't you? Well, yes, I am. Okay, then, here's your commandment. Here are your marching orders. Here's what it is that you, Christian, are supposed to be doing. As you're going, make disciples of all nations. I'm not sure when it happened that we took the Great Commission, laid it on the back of the professional clergy, and everybody else gets to participate vicariously as the minister, quote-unquote, pastor, goes out and performs the ministry. That's a thing that the Bible never speaks of. The Bible never said that. The Bible doesn't know anything about pastors and ministers going out to the exclusion of the people of God. Every man a minister. You are a chosen race, a holy priesthood. The Bible knows nothing about that individual going in the stead of others. As we're going, we ought to make disciples. We are Christians, aren't we?
Well, apparently we're not sure.
Well, that's an unfortunate thing.
But apparently that's not a problem for Muslims. Now, here's another story that I took yesterday. The headline is "Extremist Cleric to Lead White House Protest Calling for Muslims to Rise Up and Establish Islamic State in America." A hardline Muslim cleric who sparked anger across the U.S. with his anti-American comments in a television interview this month is to hold a protest outside the White House. British extremist Anjem Qadri, who once said the flag of Islam will fly over the White House, has announced he will lead a demonstration calling on Muslims to establish the Sharia law across America. The rally, planned for March 3rd, is to take place just weeks after his on-screen row with Fox News presenter Sean Hannity. The 43-year-old Qadri, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that correctly, it's C-H-O-U-D-A-R-Y, called Americans the biggest criminals in the world today. The former leader of outlaw group Islam 4UK told the Daily Star, "We expect thousands to come out and support us." Mr. Cowdery said the march rally was organized by the Islamic Thinkers Society, an extremist group based in New York. Two other British extremists, Abu Izzedine and Saiful Islam, have also been asked to speak at the demonstration. Izzedine is the hate preacher who caused fury last year when he called British soldiers murderers the day he was released from jail after a 3.5-year sentence for inciting terrorism. Mr. Cowdery told the newspaper the event is a rally, a call for the Sharia, a call for the Muslims to rise up and establish the Islamic State in America. Now, do you think this is a tempest in a teapot, Pastor, or is this serious?
I think absolutely not. It is not a tempest in a teapot. I think it's absolutely serious. I think that this encroachment of Islamic Sharia law on both the European states and in America, as it were, is a very serious problem. I think again, we just continue to give up our status, our positioning intellectually, philosophically, religiously. America has a rule of law. We have a rule of law. And we resolved the issue about the current rule of law being the rule of law that we would follow when we had the Civil War. There will be no other rule of law in America. And we need to stand up, our politicians, our political structure, and say very clearly, we are America, this is what America does, and this is who we are as Americans. There is no precedent, there is no way that anyone gets to impose an other rule of law in these United States of America. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's Sharia law, it doesn't matter if it's a Mormon law, it doesn't matter if it's communism, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what it is. We have a rule of law.
Well, we just got done with Pastor Mark Hawkinson in the previous hour of the Bible study today.
Brilliant man. Brilliant theologian.
I don't know if you were able to hear any of that conversation or not, but we were in Romans chapter 12, verses 9 and following. The marks of the true Christian. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Never be conceited.
Mm-hmm.
Repay no one evil for evil, but give thought to do what is honorable in the sight of all.
Mm-hmm.
Never avenge yourselves, but leave it to the wrath of God, for it is written, vengeance is mine. Now, when you take those verses, and I kind of cherry-picked that a little bit.
Sure you did.
You take those verses and you plug them into the conversation we're having about the call for an Islamic nation in America and the Islamic flag flying over the White House and Sharia law. What are we supposed to do with that? Are we supposed to just roll over?
No, I think not. If we jumped forward a little bit, and Romans 13:1 would say we must submit to the governing authority, for there is no authority except that which God has established. And so for someone to come to these United States or to any other country and with the intention, expressed intention, of imposing another governing authority is going to cause and be the cause for disharmony. That's arrogant in itself, isn't it? You America, you've had this thing wrong for the last 200 years. You're the greatest criminal nation in the history of the earth. Excuse me for a minute while I go live in Kansas or live in Atlanta while I'm defaming you and saying this. Because it far exceeds anything that I have in the country that I'm from, but yeah, you guys are the worst criminals in the history of the earth, and so I'm going to come and impose my government on you, and I think Scripture clearly says when we go to another place, we submit ourselves to the governing authority. We don't go to Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan, wherever it happens to be, and impose democracy on those. And yet, because of the way that Islam is established, they feel free to come and try to impose then Sharia law on the United States or on Britain or on Spain or on Italy. I think that's anti-Christian. That's anti-Romans 13. Dare I say anti-Christ?
Well, you have a mosque in Atlanta.
We have a number of mosques in Atlanta, yeah.
And this story that I have here, and, you know, it's, I have the story that I have. It's on WorldNet Daily. I'm sure you can look it up.
Right.
It's posted on February 21st. Strongly suggests that if you have a mosque, particularly a major urban mosque, that you have the Muslim Brotherhood in your midst.
Mm-hmm.
So what does Georgia citizen and Peace Lutheran Church Decatur pastor Victor Belton think we should do about that?
I think they have every right, according to our rule of law, to be here. They have every right to exercise their religious freedom. They have no right to compromise mine. And they have no right to like any other God-fearing citizen of these United States of America. They have no right to come in and impose what they believe on our system of government or our society or on our citizens. And Christianity doesn't either, kind of, by the way. I mean, we don't have a bully pulpit from which we Christians get to beat folks up and demand that people go to church or demand that they follow the Ten Commandments or demand that they be Christian and followers of Jesus. The Christian church doesn't have that either. And so as far as Islam's concerned or as far as any of the other world religions are concerned, as they come to these United States, they need to be subject to the same restrictions as every other religion in these United States of America.
Well, here's another story from WorldNet Daily, which was posted yesterday in the evening, written by Bob Unruh. The headline on this story is lawsuit regarding honor killings okay by Michigan Sharia. The plaintiffs challenged the city's official cooperation with Islamic interests. And the story says a lawsuit that challenges the official cooperation by the city of Dearborn, Michigan, which has one of the largest populations of Muslims in the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
with Islamic interests makes a stunning allegation, that is, that under the recognized Sharia law in the city of Dearborn, there have been honor-killing murders that have been covered up. The lawsuit was brought by the Thomas More Law Center on behalf of four Christians whose speech and other civil rights were restricted by official city action at several recent city-sponsored Arab Fest events. The lawsuit on behalf of Act 17 Apologetics, Nabil Qureshi, David Wood, Paul Rizkala, Nagin Mile and Joshua Hogg names defendants the city of Dearborn, the mayor, the police chief, and assorted others. And the lawsuit alleges that under Sharia law, honor killings are happening in America, and the authorities are looking the other way. Now, this, if it's true, and it remains to be seen whether or not this will be proved to be true, we'll have to watch the lawsuit play out. This is really scary stuff, it seems to me.
It is. And it's most scary primarily because of the ground that we're giving up. There is no ground on which in the United States of America, there is no ground on which Sharia law has a leg to stand on. That's not our rule of law. We have constitutions. We have the amendments to the Constitution. We have state legislatures. We have county legislatures. That's how we are organized. And those
suppose
are the folks that say this is in keeping with the law and this is not in keeping with the law.
Suppose it's proven to be true that there's been at least one honor killing in Dearborn, which the authorities have ignored because it's over there in the Muslim community.
Our,
what should happen?
Yes. Our rule of law knows nothing about an honor killing. Our rule of law only understands murder. That's our rule of law. And so consequently, it seems to me, that's murder.
So I suppose we could find the person who perpetrated the honor killing and prosecute them under our rule of law. But what about the mayor? What about the police chief who are being accused here of looking the other way, away from our rule of law, as it pertains to the application of Sharia law in the Muslim community?
Now the great thing about the United States of America is that when folks stand up and lay their hand on the Bible or whatever the tradition is in Dearborn and say, I will uphold the Constitution of the United States. I mean, I think that's the pledge that all elected officials go by. These guys have not done that and need to be summarily removed.
Removed.
Absolutely, removed from office because they've just broken their covenant. I think that every elected official in the United States of America is elected on the basis of the Constitution and bylaws of these United States of America, not on Sharia law. And so they are duty bound by law to uphold the Constitution and bylaws of these United States. And that does not leave any room for folks to look in another direction because there's a political minority that makes it expedient to do so.
505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727. Let's take this telephone call. Hi, Jan. You're on the Bible study.
Hi, Chuck. Hi, Pastor Bill.
Hello, Miss Jan. Hi, y'all.
I'm doing fine.
Hi, y'all.
Yes, we're fine. It's such an interesting conversation. It makes me think of, you know, how Jesus criticized the Pharisees, or was it the lawyers, when he said, you put burdens heavy to bear on people and you don't lift a hand to help them with it.
Mm-hmm.
I see our political leaders using the gospel to advance their position,
mm-hmm.
and giving lip service to their faith. But that's a whole nother conversation. I called for your help with comparing and contrasting Luke 6, verse 37, and John 7, verse 24.
You want to read those for us, Jan?
Luke 6:37 says, judge not, and you will not be judged. Condemn not, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. And John 7:24 says, Jesus said, do not judge by appearances, but judge with right judgment. These two passages seem to suggest to me that our judgment needs to not be condemning or criticizing, but it does need to be motivated by the Spirit's discernment. And the reason I say that is I see Christians in the United States unwilling or unable to support the American rule of law and just getting caught up in specific regional squabbles when people are dying,
mm-hmm.
spiritually, and we are called to witness and be ambassadors wherever we are, and sometimes that means challenging the process and abuse of the process.
All right, here's what we're going to do. Thank you, Jan. Pastor, mm-hmm. if you can retain those points there. We're going to come to you back on the other side of the break. Time for us to take our bottom of the hour break. You're listening to the Ask the Pastor Hour of the Bible Study. I'm Chuck Rathert. Our guest in this hour is Dr. Victor Belton. He is pastor at Peace Lutheran Church in Decatur, Georgia, which calls Atlanta one of its fine suburbs. Our numbers are 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727. Feel free to join the conversation. We'll be right back.
Servanthood is a core value of Concordia Seminary. To be a servant is alien to so many people in our society. Even some clergy take on authoritarian airs. But Jesus, Son of God and Lord of all, came as a servant. We want Concordia graduates to model servanthood to their congregations and to their communities. Servanthood, that's the Christian way.
When your parents divorced, you were shell-shocked, though assured it had nothing to do with you, that they both loved you, and that you'd be fine, just fine. Whether you believe that or not, you lost something deeply and firmly rooted in your personhood. It's called the loss of being. You can get it back, says Dr. Andrew Root. Next time, Woman to Woman.
Saturday mornings at 9:30 on KFUO Radio.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
A federal judge has permanently struck down a pro-abortion law passed by the Baltimore City Council. It attacks pro-life help centers by forcing them to put up signs saying they don't offer abortion services. Many abortion-minded women go into these centers and are educated about abortion and their unborn babies. As a result, many of them choose life for their babies. This law was retaliation by the abortion industry and pro-abortion activists. However, the judge said the law was viewpoint-based and unconstitutional under the First Amendment of free speech. It's a huge pro-life victory because Austin, Texas has passed a similar law and New York City is thinking about doing so. It seems the pro-lifers are the only ones driving for women to have a choice.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
At peace and with God. I'm Steve Coleman with today's Religion Roundup. The California pastor of one of the couples slain Tuesday by Somali pirates says of Scott and Jean Adam,
"They died doing what they loved to do. They died in the midst of taking the word of God to the people of this world."
The Adams, along with Bob Riggle and Phyllis McKay of Seattle, were taken hostage Friday when pirates seized their yacht south of Oman when the pirates fired a rocket-propelled grenade at a U.S. warship that was following the yacht Tuesday. Gunfire erupted and the four Americans were fatally wounded. Monsignor Lloyd Torgerson told mourners at St. Monica's Catholic Church in Santa Monica, California,
"Our belief is that Jean and Scott have received that unfading crown of glory, that they are with God, and that they are at peace."
The Adams had been sailing around the world since 2004, distributing Bibles to remote regions. I'm Steve Coleman.
Coming up next time on Adventures in Odyssey, the Barclay Rathbone Hawaii vacation is not exactly going well. George and family only want to relax, while Bart wants to see everything. That is, unless he has to pay for it. And to make matters worse, Rodney is convinced he can win Donna's heart. Will the families learn how to have fun without trying to kill each other? Find out on the next Adventures in Odyssey.
Saturday mornings at 8:30 on KFUO Radio.
"Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." These words from our Savior anchor the theme of the Women's Day of Renewal at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville. Take a vacation with God March 11th and 12th and hear Phyllis Wallace cruise around chaos with the One Who Calms the Seas. You'll also hear Ruth Cook on A Little Vacation with God, Sabbath Keeping for Today's Busy Woman. There are workshops on a variety of topics. Find out the details at goodshepherdcollinsville.org.
Yes, the old "judge not lest you be judged" question. That came from Jan right before the bottom of the hour. You can join the program too, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Dr. Victor Belton is our guest, and he has been patiently waiting here to respond to Jan's question. Doctor?
Thank you, Jan. I have no idea. No, seriously.
That's really helpful.
Yeah, I thought it might be. Listen, this. Thank you for the question. Luke 6, that happens in the midst of one of Jesus's teaching sessions, like the way that Luke recalls hearing about the Beatitudes, perhaps. And Jesus is going through this litany of things that you will do if you are a follower of his, if you are redeemed by the Most High God. And so if you are and you claim that, then you're blessed regardless of your state of being. Woe to those who don't receive it. But love your neighbors, do good to your enemies, bless those that curse you, and the rest of that. And then we get to the verse that you mentioned, judge not. The point is, when you're engaged in all of those activities, do it without judging whether or not the person you're engaged with and doing it for is good or evil. Don't judge their motives. Don't judge their attitudes. Don't judge their actions. Serve them with a servant's heart, and let God do the judging. There is a judge, after all, and there is a sentence that will be pronounced, but you're not the judge, and you don't get the pronounced sentence. Jesus, after all, becomes the judge as he comes again in glory, and Jesus takes the punishment for everyone's sin upon himself. And so there is no room then for us to be judge and jury. We just do those good works that God has prepared for us beforehand, that we may walk in them. And so it's a right word from Jesus to say, when you're doing it, don't get hung up in the physical and start judging the motives and the actions of others.
There's another caller at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Hi, Herman. You're on the Bible study.
Thank you for taking my call. Pastor Belton earlier discussing this issue over the call for Sharia law in the United States and the lawsuit in Dearborn, Michigan over the honor killings.
Mm-hmm.
The advocacy of Sharia law goes even beyond that. If it were fully implemented, there would be the overt physical and violent suppression of certainly everything but Islam, Christianity,
mm-hmm.
and even in the world marketplace, Muslims have blown up Buddhist statues in Afghanistan. They've attacked Sikhs and Hindus. So while I would certainly say Jesus Christ is the only true God, Lord, and Savior, mm-hmm. you see the implications of what they're advocating, that you would be in subjugation to Sharia law in terms of your total deportment and beliefs, as has happened in other parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've even, it even reaches beyond the honor killing issue inside the Muslim community at Dearborn, Michigan. Their prospect is to conquer the world.
Sure.
Thank you, Herman. Any comments,
you.
Pastor?
Thank you for that, Herman. I think you're absolutely right. That's their mandate, to go forth and conquer, and whatever you can't conquer, kill. And the framers of our Constitution and of this great nation knew that that would be a possible outcome, not only of Islam, but of Christianity even. Maybe some Christians would slip off the page and want to make Christianity the ruling religion in these United States. And so the restriction that's put in place is that no law will be enacted that restricts the exercise of religion is a good one, because it not only protects the rule of that rule of law not only protects us from Christians that may fall off the deep end, but it also protects us from all those others that would fall off the deep end. And so we have the things in place that are necessary in order to restrict the promotion of Sharia law or anything else or any other religion in this society taking preeminence, and we simply need to follow the rule of law.
Here's another story from WorldNet Daily. This one came Monday out of Jerusalem. In what Egypt's Christians fear may be a sign of things to come, a senior Islamic cleric asked Christians to bow in Muslim prayer in an act of submission to Allah. On Friday, famed Egyptian theologian Yusuf al-Qaradawi, a spiritual leader to the Muslim Brotherhood who hosts a popular Islam-themed television show on Al Jazeera, led the Islamic prayer services in Cairo's Tahrir Square, the epicenter of Egypt's uprising. While he repeatedly offered nods to Egypt's Coptic Christians, unmentioned in most news media accounts of the ceremony was that Qaradawi asked all in attendance, specifically singling out Christians, to bow in Islamic prayer. A Coptic Christian at the event told World News Daily the request was intimidating. Whether he meant it or not, this was asking Christians to bow in an act of submission to Islam and Allah, said the Christian, who asked that his name be withheld. There were maybe 250,000 people at the rally. Almost all were Muslims, so when we are asked to bow and we are in the extreme minority in the crowd, it is intimidating. The Christian witness said thousands of Christians in attendance at the rally did not bow. I don't see a peaceful resolution to the storm clouds that are forming on even the horizon of St. Louis or Decatur. I don't see a peaceful resolution here. Doctor, do you?
When yes, only because this is the United States of America. And our foundation, well, a peaceful solution here, maybe not in Egypt because their founding documents aren't as solid as ours in the United States. But again, our very constitutional law and Bill of Rights would restrict anyone in these United States saying that anyone has to bow to anything. I mean, we'd have to become Egypt in order for that to fly in these United States. If I could share a story, it is a daunting thing. I visited Sudan in 2005 with Bafo Dang, who is an evangelist who's currently in Sudan, and we were out in Khartoum at dusk at the time of prayer, and the interesting thing is that when that started going over the airwaves, all the stores shut down, people are out washing their feet and kneeling on their mats, and the only people standing were the infidel. And of course I'd have been one of those with the other folks that were on the trip. And so it is a very intimidating thing for all the cars to have stopped on the street. Nobody's driving. All of the shop owners are closed. People are kneeling on their prayer mats out in front, and we're standing there. It's a very, very, very intimidating atmosphere. Because if you want to pick off the infidel, you just kind of pick off the guys that are still standing. I mean, we're big targets.
Well, you're not. I'm not deriving any comfort from this, Pastor, and the notion that because we have a Constitution and a Bill of Rights, that somehow shields us from that intimidation. I'm not so convinced.
It is incumbent upon our judicial leaders, our legislative leaders, to stand and give no more ground in that arena. Give absolutely not another inch of ground in that arena.
I think that I could make a plausible argument, maybe even compelling from my perspective, that the right to privacy in the Constitution and its subsequent amendments does not provide for the aborting of unborn children, but somehow, some way, our judiciary and our legislators managed to find that in there.
Yes, and so men are subject and counsel are subject to err. And when we err, we make major kinds of problems. I'm not a constitutionalist. What does that mean?
That might be the biggest word we've ever had on the Bible.
The Constitution isn't God. You know,
yeah.
It's not up in that arena, but it certainly is a fine document for establishing the parameters around which we make those kinds of decisions. Again, if legislators had not begun giving up the first inch of ground on that issue, on the abortion issue, it's life, and our constitutional, our founding documents say every person on the planet is subject to the pursuit of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's solves that whole question. When we start to waffle on the issues and start talking about, well, does life start at 6 months? Does life start when fertilization happens? Does life start 6 weeks, 8 weeks out? When does life start to happen? When we start waffling on those things, that's when we start getting into trouble. It was ironclad. It was ironclad. The law was ironclad, understood when the framers put it together. Now, we would say since that time, we've become wiser. Well, question that. Since that time, we have more data. Whether or not we've become wiser is another issue. And we certainly have more data. But we use that data in a way that sometimes undermines what the framers had in mind when they put this wonderful republic in place.
I want to play a little bit of audio for you here. This is going to be difficult to understand. I realize that. I wish the audio were a little bit better. Involving a confrontation between a congressman from Florida, Alan West. Are you familiar with him at all, Pastor?
I am not.
He's a congressman from Florida's 22nd district.
Mm-hmm.
He is a Republican congressman. He was, I guess, having some kind of a town hall meeting type thing
mm-hmm.
when he was confronted by a representative of the organization CARE, which is the, I think it's the Council for Arabic or American Islamic Relations.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting exchange. Let's just listen to a little bit of this and see what we can pick up from it.
What did you bring here? You're probably
good.
Cool.
Good to see you again.
Pleasure.
Yeah, it is. You recently told a Marine that the terrorists that attack the United States and the people that are attacking America are following Islam, and they are following the instruction of the Quran. So, very simple question. I'm not going to take a lot of your time. I'm not going to comment on Mr. Kaufman's basic accusations. Can you show me one verse in this Quran where it says to attack America, attack Americans, or attack innocent people?
Well, of course it doesn't say attack America.
So, the congressman is confronted by the representative from CARE, and if you observe the video, you can see where the congressman listens for the question. Finally, the representative says, well, now you have suggested that those who have attacked America are acting from a motivation that comes from Islam. Then he holds up the Quran to the congressman. He says, can you show me one verse in the Quran where it says that Muslims should attack America? And then the debate is on. And the congressman goes on to point out that, well, since the Quran was written some 1,400 years ago or so, obviously you're not going to find America in there.
Mm-hmm.
It is a fascinating exchange. And what do you make of the confrontation from the CARE official?
Well, I think it's a red herring, isn't it? It's an argument going nowhere. Because of course there's no verse in the Quran that says attack America. There are verses all over the Quran, however, that would talk about the infidel and how you treat them. And the infidel would be anyone that does not agree that Allah is God and Muhammad is his messenger. And it's interesting that he would ask this of Alan West. Who I didn't know, but you know the wonderful Google thing. He's a U.S. Army retired lieutenant colonel.
Yes, he is.
And he was in Desert. He's Atlanta boy, as a matter of fact, in Desert Storm. And so he has firsthand seen some of the results of what happens in a nation where Sharia law is the operative rule. And so even if he can't point to a specific verse in the Quran, he can certainly talk with some expertise regarding his own personal observation of what's happened in Afghanistan and Iraq based on Iraqi freedom, his time spent there and those kinds of things.
So I
think it's just a red herring.
The reason I wanted to play that for you is because as I listen to you in this conversation, as I bring forth documentation that is in the media, And we all know we have to be careful what we trust in the media. I understand that. But as I bring forth documentation in the media that Islam is on the move in Dearborn, on the move in mosques across America, on the move in this particular confrontation with the congressman, you seem to be saying, or I shouldn't say seem to be saying, I hear you saying it's time to push back. It's time to stand on the principles of our founding documents and not to have these freedoms usurped from us. So here comes the CARE representative, and the congressman pushes back. What you will hear if you listen to that audio, if you view that video, is the folks in the meeting there begin to applaud.
Mm-hmm.
They like what the congressman is saying, and I think they don't like what the CARE representative is doing. But if we push back, Pastor, and here's my point, you're probably wondering, what's your point?
Mm-hmm.
If we push back, then we're going to have straw men set up.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have red herrings played on us. We're going to have questions like, can you show me one verse in the Quran that says that Muslims are supposed to kill Americans? And, you know, there are some of us who are not all that good in that situation. So maybe we would all just be better to get in the closet and hope for the best.
You know, as a world citizen, and that's what we all have to be in 2011, because of the access we have to the internet and any other documents, we have to be world citizens. We have to be well informed about things that are going on the planet, and I think that's a responsibility. And so even if we don't know where to find it in the Quran, we should certainly be well enough acquainted with our own founding documents so that we say, you know what, I can't tell you exactly where that would be in the Quran. I can tell you what the United States stands for, however, and the thing that you're promoting in these United States is not part of how our rule of law and how we have decided we're going to govern ourselves. And I don't think that's pushback. I think that's establishing the boundary.
Dr. Belton, you have African Americans in your congregation?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Young African American men?
Yes.
It's my understanding that Islam has really found a foothold among younger African American men. Are you finding that to be a challenge in your congregation?
And not in our congregation, in some of the peripheral community members. I actually had a young man who played around. And Islam can go this way. Since Jesus is a good prophet, he was free to come to church as well as free to go to the mosque. And when I asked why he holds to Islam, it wasn't that he thought Islam was better or more informative or even a better way of life than Christianity. He was frank in saying that you Christians don't have enough structure for me. I need someone to tell me to pray three times a day and then hold my feet to the fire to make sure that I do it. I need someone to tell me how to make my tithes and my offerings. I need someone to tell me how to conduct myself.
Well, that sounds about as countercultural as it gets. It seems like everybody else is saying, don't tell me what to do. I'm not doing it. I don't care who you are.
Exactly. And this guy was clearly saying, I cannot be healthy with that level of freedom. I need more structure in my life. And on that basis, he made his choice for Islam rather than making a choice for Christianity. Because after all is said and done, there's absolutely nothing that I can do with saved by grace through faith in Christ Jesus for good works. I had no handcuffs for him. Freedom is a dangerous thing.
Well, it seems I certainly am not well informed enough to know exactly what's happening in Egypt, what's happening in Tunisia, what's happening in Libya, but it's being portrayed in Western media as a quest for freedom.
Mm-hmm.
So that would seem to be running in the opposite direction of what you just described as the culture that is provided by Islam.
Now, appreciate that this is a African American male in Atlanta, Georgia.
I understand.
It's not folks. There are not people who have lived under Sharia law in Egypt or in Iran or in one of those Libya.
I understand.
Other regimes, and so there's a distinct difference, I think, in the way that Islam gets practiced out in America and the way it gets practiced out in Libya. For
example. About 5 years, 10 years down the road, do you think that Islam will be at the doorstep of Peace Lutheran Church in Decatur, Georgia? Or do you think that Islam will be more of a faint memory?
No, I don't think Islam's going away. And I think it is and will be at our doorstep in more and more in the coming years. That's why I think it's time for us to pick up Matthew 28 and as we're going to start discipling. And it's not just pastor, it's all of the saints that of God that claim Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. We are Christians, aren't we? Then let's start doing what Christians do. As we're going, let's make disciples of all nations. We are saved by grace, aren't
we? Well, I wish we had a little bit more time here, but I was listening to a radio program yesterday which held forth there was a host. There was a person who was representing the Christian faith. There was a person who was representing the Jewish faith,
mm-hmm.
and they were all more or less in agreement that the Christians, the Jews, and even the unrepresented Muslims in this particular panel are all praying to the same God. If there was anything that they seemed to agree on, it was that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you say we're all Christians, aren't we? Maybe not.
Well, we need to get serious about this thing and define what makes one a Christian, and actually we don't need to define it. We just need to go ahead and confess what it is that Jesus has spoken.
There was somebody who called in, a Christian who called in and kind of took the Christian representative to task over the exclusive claims of Christ, and there is no way to the Father except through me.
Right,
and he was. After he was off the program, he was pretty much in a gentle but firm way chastised by the Christian representative for saying that. And he said that Jesus never made a claim that you had to make a verbal commitment to Christ.
See, you know what? We have to get used to this fact. We're like the reporter. We're like the town crier. We report the news. We don't make it. We don't change it. We simply report it. Jesus did say, there is no other way. You know, I am the way and the truth and the life. Jesus did say it. I don't get to unsay it. I don't get to unring the bell. I just get to report what it is that Jesus said. And if that makes me exclusive and if that makes me not sympathetic and all of those other things, then I guess I need to suffer with that. But I don't get to undo what Jesus did, and I don't get to unsay what Scripture says.
Well, we're out of time here, Doctor, but based on our conversation here today, I'm not sure if I like it or not, but I think I'm rolling up my sleeves.
Well, good. You are Christian, aren't you?
Let me check. I'm checking my pulse. Yeah, still Christian, yeah.
Then our sleeves need to be rolled up, man. We need to get to the work. We need to go into the fray.
As Amen,
we're going,
brother.
We need to disciple.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. God bless you real good.
And you too, sir.
Thank you, my friend.
Dr. Victor Belton, pastor at Peace Lutheran Church in Decatur, Georgia. Our guest here on our Ask the Pastor conversation.
Listen to Chuck Rathard and guest pastors Monday through Friday at this same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download programs from the Bible Study archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis.